Dr. Henry Nyman, Ph.D., and yours truly. And I want to take just a moment and dedicate this program to our dear friend and colleague, Dr. Patricia Doyle. Patty brought Henry to this program originally many, many years ago and left us last year. And she would just be all over this, like she always was for so many years. SARS, again, as Henry said, 2002-2003. They were formally hanging the date of 2003 on it. The World Health Organization says SARS was recognized at the end of February 2003. That's what the WHO has formally online. Now, let me go back to this story from out of Beijing on NDTV. China warned Wednesday that a SARS-like virus, it's, as you've heard, it's virtually a perfect clone that has killed 9 people, infected hundreds, and we could say, I think, without much hesitation, reasonably, probably thousands, and spread to other countries, could mutate as authorities scramble to contain the disease during the Lunar New Year travel season. Well, good luck. I mentioned the Cathay Pacific airline crews, all the cabin crews are demanding to be allowed to wear masks. 300,000 Chinese are expected to travel to Thailand, which is going to become one hell of a petri dish full of all kinds of viruses and bacteria. They say in this story, the new coronavirus has caused alarm for its similarity to SARS. Well, again, we've talked about that. SARS killed about 650 people across mainland China back in 2003 when it officially got its start. You heard Henry describe how it began as a relatively, now I won't say benign, but it wasn't a very lethal virus in the beginning until it changed. And once it changed, it took off. The disease is transmitted via the respiratory tract, and there is, quote, the possibility of viral mutation and further spread of the disease, end quote. So said the National Health Commission Vice Minister Li Bin at a news conference in Beijing there Wednesday morning, which is just a few hours ago. The World Health Organization was to hold an emergency meeting Wednesday. That's our time to determine whether to declare a rare global public health emergency over the disease, which has also been detected in the United States, Taiwan, Thailand, Japan, and South Korea. Time to declare a, get the jump on it, Henry, and declare it a global public health emergency?
I call it a fake.
That's
it. It's a P-H-E-I-C.
Yeah.
For public health emergency of international concern. That's what a fake is. And so they're going to determine whether they're going to declare a fake. If they declare a fake, then they kind of put everybody on notice that there's a problem out there and they should take measures to get it under control. There.
This one other note on the Lunar New Year, with Vancouver now being about 60% Chinese, Vancouver, British Columbia, there are going to be more than a few traveling to Thailand for the Lunar New Year festivities. That's just the way it works. So it's just a matter of minutes or hours before we hear of the second, third, fourth. There are going to be a lot of cases here in all likelihood. Go ahead.
Well, just so you know, when there was one one group in England, they kind of made a projection based on how many cases had been identified outside of China at the time. There had been two, and then when after they had written it, and then they did a couple modifications, but they didn't modify the whole thing. So you can see parts of it was written for two examples, and then the second one in Thailand happened, so they included that. It kind of been their introduction, but they, you know, left that virus out of a lot of the discussions in the body of the text, the paper. But they made an estimate that there were like 1,700 cases at the time, and then plus or minus, and then it went from like as low as 800, as high as like 4,500 or so. And that may end up being low because, you know, at the time when they first did it, there were two cases that had jumped, you know, one into Thailand and Bangkok, and the other into by Tokyo and Japan. And they based it upon how big the population was, 19 million, how many people were flying out, and where those flights were going. And it turns out that Bangkok is, I think, the number one destination from Wuhan. And
really?
And they had a little table. And the reason it's the number one destination is it's cheap. That the round trip from Wuhan to Bangkok, I think, was $400, and you know, it was like couple thousand dollars to go to places like Hong Kong or Tokyo, and so it's very reasonably priced, and they had all kind of, you know, vacation packages, etc. So I'm pretty sure that Bangkok is the number one international destination for Wuhan, and so and they have two cases so far, so they are out in front as far as the number of.
I mean, what could they think about the Thai health officials? 300,000 expected minimally, and a lot of those coming from Wuhan. What could they possibly realistically do down there? Not much. Not much.
No, I mean, they're doing the screening, and they actually have the right assay. Now that's what happened with the Philippines. The reason the Philippines was not on the list that you just read was because they don't have an assay for this virus. So they basically have been using an assay that'll pick up any coronavirus. And and there are like four different coronaviruses that produce very mild disease, and some of them are more common in children. And this was a 5-year-old that was positive for the pan corona virus test. So that child was infected with a coronavirus, but they had to send the sample to Australia to find out if it was this coronavirus or one of the more benign ones. And I mean, they tested him for SARS. He was negative for SARS, but everybody's negative for SARS. There hasn't been a SARS positive since you know, the beginning of 2004,
right,
or the end of 2003. So that's, you know, they said the child was positive, and then WHO came out and said there's been no confirmed cases in the Philippines, and it hasn't been confirmed. They have to come up with a positive in Australia, which will do the test is specific for this virus and would not register a positive for the other more benign coronaviruses. But so Bangkok does have, you know, the newer test, and so but that's what's different between where things are today versus where things were in January of 2003. In January 2003, there's kind of a newsletter, it's called ProMed, and they kind of cover infectious diseases. And they were getting reports that there was some type of mystery disease in Guangdong province. And that, you know, people that were kind of middle-aged were ending up in the hospital. And, you know, it's a fairly serious infection. And it was news about it was being suppressed. So China wasn't saying anything about this. They were denying anything was going on. They were getting reports and they were writing them up in ProMed and saying there's something going on in China. And so January, the SARS outbreak was still in that category. This coronavirus was infecting people, but the death, you know, just that I mentioned, the fatality rate wasn't that high. By the end of January, they had a total of 5 deaths, and they had a total of 300 cases that they had identified, but they started a little bit earlier. They started in November. And so it was something that there was some concern. Some people did get fairly sick. A few did die. So, I mean, normally a cold virus, people don't die. So, I mean, the other coronaviruses that were known, there's OC43 and 229, I think, E. Those are two different classes of coronavirus, and they typically just, they're like cold viruses. You know, it's like you get a cold. People don't generally die from a cold. They don't get pneumonia from a cold. They kind of get a little bit sick and they recover. So that's where it was. So it wasn't until the end of February that the Metropole Hotel happened. And even at the end of February, nobody really knew what was going on. They knew that, you know, something was going on in Guangdong province. It wasn't clear exactly what it was, but that was about it. And then the physician went and got everybody infected, you know, a number of guests infected at the Metropole Hotel. And even in February, they really didn't know. It wasn't until these people flew out, and in March, they started showing up where, you know, something came from China, and, you know, these healthcare workers are getting sick, and other patients are getting sick, and they all seem to have the same thing. And it seems to be a more severe version than had been floating around, because pretty soon there were these deaths that were showing up. And people were thinking, yeah, this is some kind of virus, and, you know, people that are, you know, 40, 50 years old are ending up in the hospital on ECMO machines and dying. And at the time, they didn't know what it was. It was just a mystery disease. And they eventually got some, you know, took some clinical samples and got it to grow on cells to kind of fuse if there's a virus there. So they could see that there was a virus in the sample because the cells were fusing. And then they had some, you know, like a coronavirus broad reactivity test, so, because there were sequences that were known from these more benign diseases. You know, those two in particular, that's, I think, all that was known at the time. So they could see what those two viruses had in common and then target the common region to see if they could just get something that would pick up any coronavirus, just like they're still using in the Philippines. And they did that, and they got this virus, and they got a little bit of sequence information, and then they knew that they had a coronavirus, but it was a coronavirus that was, you know, 2B. There were no other 2Bs that were known at the time, so it was different than either the OC43 or the 229E. It was kind of in between those two. And then they got more sequences, and they ended up calling it SARS. So it really wasn't until the middle of March that they really had the virus, you know, spreading internationally. And several of these people that were affected at the Metropole Hotel became super spreaders and did all that. So apples to apples, at this time in 2003, it was still kind of a rumored disease. It had not gotten out of Guangdong province. It wasn't in Hong Kong. It wasn't in any of the countries it ended up in. And all of that happened because the virus evolved and it mutated. And they got this 29 nucleotide deletion, and that made it more lethal and more infectious. So that's what we're comparing. We're comparing to what it's like now. This time in 2003, there were no international cases. It hadn't even gotten, you know, across, and it was centered in Guangdong province, but it hadn't crossed the border to get into Hong Kong. So it wasn't in Hong Kong. It was just in mainland China, and it was just in Guangdong province. It wasn't in any adjacent provinces either, and or at least it wasn't reported. And so that's what you're comparing. You're comparing a virus now that basically has already jumped to Thailand a couple of times, is jumped to Japan, is jumped to South Korea, is jumped to Taiwan, and is jumped to the U.S., and it might have jumped to the Philippines if that one comes up positive, and there's a suspect case in Australia. And so it may have made many international jumps, and it's not confined to a single province in China. It's not just in Hubei province where Wuhan is. It's already up in Beijing, and it's already up in Shanghai. And it's, you know, this number that just came out, I think it didn't have that many details, but there were now 440 confirmed cases, and they were in 13 provinces. So at this time in 2003, the virus was still in one province, and it was still in one country. Now it's in, you know, 13 provinces, or at least confirmed, is probably in even more than that. You know, numbers will go up in the next week or so. And it's already in multiple countries. But the one thing that hasn't happened yet is that the virus hasn't jumped to another country and acted like a super spreader. So far, all of these cases that have been identified, including the one in the U.S., have been mild cases. So these are people that the main reason they were tested is because they had been in Wuhan. So they were in Wuhan, they had flu-like symptoms, and they thought they should be checked out. And in many cases, it's the person the one that went to Japan as well as the one to the U.S., they went to the doctor. You know, there wasn't anybody who was knocking on the door and say, you know, we heard you were coughing on the plane or something. You know, they read the papers. They are online nowadays. They looked online and they saw that there's a problem in Wuhan. They just came from Wuhan and they got flu-like symptoms, and they wanted to find out what their status is. But they've, you know, the one in Japan, by the time he was positive, he was barely positive, and he was ready to be discharged. And the same thing happened with the one in Thailand. So these were people that weren't, you know, on ventilators and had breathing difficulties and basically, you know, was touch and go whether they were going to make it. These were these were milder cases. They were also younger cases. The one in the U.S. was in his 30s. I think the one in Japan was in his 30s. And so for the most part, they were younger. And with SARS, the younger patients, you know, they were sick enough, so they had to go to the hospital, and some of them did have to have breathing assistance. But most of the deaths were older. You know, they were at least in their 40s. Now, 40s isn't normally considered to be that old to get a cold virus and die. So the ones that were 40 and 50, that was kind of unusual that they ended up dying, even if they had an underlying condition. I mean, if they had diabetes, that's usually not a combination. You know, a lot of these chronic diseases that people have are under control, and it's not that they're not dying because they're diabetic and basically got a cold virus.
I just got a new piece from the South China Morning Post. You'll like this. Let me read this. You'll like this. Then we're going to talk about what you all need to be concerned about and what steps you might take beside paying attention and being well informed. This comes from the South China paper, the Morning Post again. Coronavirus to bats, may Chinese scientists say. Virus found in fruit bats is a common ancestor of the two strains, study suggests. Looks like they're sitting on information here. New strain has an unusually...
This is anybody that can read a sequence already knows this, and then they knew this 3 weeks ago.
Just playing with it. Here's the key. New strain has unusually high ability to bind to a human protein, researchers calculate. Now, while Henry is processing that, he knows exactly what that means. But I'm going to read the rest
of it. Well, they're probably saying ACE2. Did they say ACE2?
I may or may not see that. It's not very long. The coronavirus discovered in Wuhan may share the same bat-related ancestor as SARS, according to the latest study by Chinese scientists, which said the strain was weaker, we have to say so far, or is it, than the devastating 2002-2003 SARS outbreak, but was still highly infectious. The new virus shares a common ancestor with severe acute respiratory syndrome, or SARS, in HKU9-1, a virus found in fruit bats. The connection with wild animals was confirmed on Wednesday by GAO Gao Fu, F-U, director of such and such. According to Gao, the coronavirus, which has sickened over 400 people across the country, these are confirmed, and led to 9 deaths, originated from wild animals sold at a seafood market in Wuhan. Gao warned that a major challenge was that the new strain was adapting and mutating. The scientists' findings, published on Tuesday, suggest that the danger posed by the pneumonia-like virus may have been underestimated by the research community, and came a day after the Chinese government's announcement of emergency measures to contain its spread. A joint research team from the Chinese Academy of Sciences, the People's Liberation Army, and Institute Pasteur of Shanghai estimated how the viral strain would interact with cells in the human respiratory system using computer simulation based on released data. Almost to the end, Henry. The Wuhan coronavirus natural host would be bats, but between bats and humans, there may be an unknown intermediate. That's what the researchers said. Previously, a majority of scientists believed the new virus could not cause an epidemic as serious as that of SARS because its genes were quite different. They found that, like SARS, the virus targeted a protein called ACT3. According to their calculations, the binding free energy between the virus and the protein would be -50.6 kcal per mol, 5 times what was usually considered significant. Although comparatively weaker than SARS, the Wuhan COVS protein is regarded to have strong binding affinity to human ACE2, ACE2.
Yeah, that's what I said.
That's what you did. What surprised the scientists most, however, was that the virus could maintain the strong binding ability despite its significant structural differences from SARS. Of the virus, 5 amino acids that play important roles in the binding process, 4 were different from those of SARS. Further examination of the virus structure showed that overall it had a high resemblance to SARS. The researchers also traced the evolution of the new virus in a government coronavirus database. On the evolutionary tree, the new virus belonged to beta coronavirus on a close but different branch to SARS. And finally, the two shared about 70-80% of genes, less than the similarity between pigs and humans. More to come. And that's the end of that story. That just came across.
Yeah, but they were 90% of the two that were from northern China. So none of that's new, really. Well, maybe the experiments they did with the binding. But all that was known as soon as the sequences were released, that if he if he just did a blast against, I said there were 41,000 coronaviruses at GeneBank. If he took one of these new viruses, one of these sequences, they were all essentially the same. If you took one of those sequences and you blasted it against the entire databases, you got millions of viruses and genes and whatever, what pops out are these two bat viruses that were from northern China that were listed as SARS-like, and they had closer to a 90% match, especially at the beginning of the genome. And those two just jumped out. And then after that, if you did the whole sequence, then it has the civet cat sequence, the SARS virus, and then the second outbreak of SARS, and then the first outbreak of SARS. And they just went bing, 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 bing. And those were the highest matches. So it was known that this was a SARS-like virus from the get-go. Right. And it was also known of the bat species, the bat isolates, it was closer to the ones in the north than the ones in the south. And I actually said this on your show as soon as the sequences came out. So that's not really news as far as where it was on the evolutionary tree or how close it was. I mean, you could get that answer in about 20 seconds, literally. Mm-hmm. If you copy the sequence that you put it in and you hit blast, you would have that result 20 seconds later.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So you're saying 90%, they're saying here the two shared about a 70 to 80% of the same genes.
I'm saying it's 90% to the bat SARS-like sequences in northern China is 70% to the SARS virus isolated from people in 2000.
Ah, very good.
Or 2003.
So it
was already clear that it was bat, and it was already clear that it was a central and northern China bat versus a southern China bat. And that's the result that you would get from that blast. And if you did a phylogenetic analysis, you get exactly what they said. It would be on the same branch. And that's what I say. It is a beta coronavirus class 2B. And so is SARS. And so is MERS. And so that's what it's close to. It's close to SARS. It's closer to SARS than it is to MERS. But both of those are class 2B of the beta coronavirus. So that was very, very clear from the day they released the first sequence, which was about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Let's we got to move now and talk about our listeners here in the States, what they need to be alert for. They need to listen to this program and watch the site. Go to Henry's website, recombinomics.com. It's a tremendous resource, which I get most of my material from Henry. He sends it right over. So we're going to let you know more quickly than probably anybody else anywhere. And we've been on this from the beginning, and Henry is, believe me, well-connected worldwide. He has sources and friends, and he's...
Yeah, so it's likely there will be more imports. The U.S. is increasing the number of airports. They've added O'Hara in Chicago and one in Atlanta as places that they're going to be doing screening. And then they're going to redirect flights that aren't scheduled to go to those airports So everybody coming from Wuhan, either direct or indirect, will end up going to the 5 airports now instead of 3. Right? You know, there already are fever checks at LAX, at JFK, and at San Francisco. So they'll increase it from 3 to 5, and they'll redirect all the air traffic to those five airports and make sure that everybody coming from Wuhan goes through a fever check. Now, as I've said before, the fever check, you know, are not anything like 100%. That, you know, if you had just been infected and you're not symptomatic, they're not going to pick it up on a fever check. And if you've taken some medication that's going to reduce your temperature, like the traveler from Japan did, you're probably, yeah, just like he did. He did not test as a positive in the fever check and got in. And so it's certainly not going to be 100% for those two reasons. And there's an incubation period where they're asymptomatic. In fact, it's not even clear that everybody develops a fever. I mean, using swine flu as an example, only about 50% of swine flu infections produce a fever. You could have a low-grade fever where it isn't high enough to register, right, or you could actually have no fever and still be infected.
All right. Well, right now, officially confirmed cases, as opposed to unconfirmed cases, we've got about 400 plus infected. The case fatality rate, now 440. The result of an infection, when someone is discharged or adjudged to be a completed patient, whatever, compared to the number of dead, we're looking at about a 40% case fatality rate now, something like that. That's a guess, but we're close. That's very surprising compared to where SARS was. But we've told you how the virus changed with SARS and how this virus has apparently changed already. What is your biggest concern right now with a case fatality rate of 40%, what this virus might do to make itself even more adaptable to H2H transmission?
Well, the concern is, just as I said, that so far all of the international cases have been mild. With SARS, which really happened, you know, they got infected in late February and they, you know, started showing symptoms and infecting others in March, there were several super spreaders. So, like I said, the one that went to Vietnam wasn't that bad and, things got under control. So within a month or so, there weren't any more SARS cases in Hanoi, which is where he arrived. So he wasn't that efficient. There were other travelers that came to the U.S. and to Canada. There were travelers, I think, from the Metropole Hotel even, that went to British Columbia. And they didn't really cause a big spread of the disease, if at all. I'm not sure how much transmission there was in British Columbia. And then there were, I don't remember the exact number, but there were a reasonable number of cases in the U.S. from SARS, but none of them were very serious. They were all milder cases. They never isolated a virus. There's no SARS virus from the U.S. In fact, there's only one from Canada, is it called Tor for Toronto. And they had problems with the samples and isolating virus. They basically had two waves in Toronto and they got one initially. And then healthcare workers were getting infected and they figured that it really wasn't worth the risk to try to isolate the virus and grow it up. So there was only one sample that came from North America. It was from Toronto, and there was nothing from the United States. So, you know, even when SARS was going and there were super spreaders, it wasn't that everybody was a super spreader, and it wasn't that every international flight that brought, you know, one or more people from China to another country led to a significant outbreak. But the concern is that at this stage, the virus time-wise is really supposed to be like the SARS was in January, and the SARS in January had not gotten out of Guangdong province to any reportable degree. No, mm-hmm. Nobody reported any cases anywhere other than Guangdong province at this time in 2003. So the concern is that this virus, which has already been able to infect enough people in China so that it's made the jump out of the country and it's infected enough people in Wuhan to, I think the report was it's now in 13 different provinces. So it's already spread within China and it's spread more than it has in any country outside of China. So these, Beijing, I think, has 10 confirmed cases now. Guangdong province, I think, has 14 before this latest report. I would guess that the four suspect cases are now positive. So I would guess that they're up to, actually, they were up to 17. So I think there are 21. They'll probably be 21 when the details come out from this update, and they say uh-huh. who these 440 are. And the concern is that the virus will become more efficient, and it will produce more super spreaders. And
define super spreader for our listeners. Define it.
Well, what's it? The super spreader is like one person that, for whatever reason, is probably related to viral load, and it might be related to how they cough or how often they cough, but mm-hmm. they manage to infect a lot of people that come into contact, including like healthcare workers, which should be fairly well protected
from
that person. Yeah. And so when you get an example like one person infected 14 healthcare workers, you know, that would fit most people's definition of a super spreader. And so that's what happened in Toronto. That started with just the son of the tourist who stayed at the Metropole Hotel. I mean, she never even got to a hospital. She died at home. And he got to the hospital, and he was really the source of all of the cases, and it was like two waves, and it was, you know, well over 100 people. I think it was a couple hundred people in Toronto. And then the same thing happened in Hong Kong, and the same thing happened in Singapore, and not so much in Hanoi. But then there was a tour group that went to Hong Kong and flew back to Taiwan, and that tour group got things going in Taiwan. So, if the international cases become super spreaders, then that creates the problem in these other countries. But the one thing that is kind of being overlooked as far as, you know, monitoring and trying to figure out what you should be worried about is, are these other places in China that is already known that the virus is starting to spread in these other metropolitan areas like Beijing or Shanghai or some of the cities in Guangdong, you know, right across the river or whatever they cross to get to Hong Kong. And so the emphasis is on Wuhan, but you know, a couple of weeks from now, there may be people that go to Beijing and come back with an infection, or go to Shanghai and get infected, and then get on a plane. And right now, they're not looking at they're only looking at people coming from Wuhan, and it's a little bit unclear how bad things are in Wuhan. You know, the mayor saying don't come. And the officials, the health officials that went there to check things out got infected. And they would be well aware that they're going into a hospital that treats the patients. And And they would be taking precautions to not get infected. They're not going there to see if it really does infectious. They were getting there, going there to see, you know, how many people were sick and how sick were they, and mm-hmm. and what kind of precautions they were taking so that there wasn't spreading. And, you know, the fact that they could get infected, you know, raises concern that it
we need to talk
there.
About what our listeners can do here now. But before I do that, there are other types of influenza which are very bad and fatal. Here's a story, just came in. Texas woman, 20, dies from flu after traveling overseas. Well, what does that mean? I just read the story, and there's not any definitive information as to what type of flu she had. Yale Good died January 16, according to an online memorial in her name. Reportedly sickened with the flu at the start of the new year and failed to improve over the next few days, her symptoms worsened and she was taken to an ER January 7. Within 10 hours of being in the hospital, she had a massive heart attack. Her heart completely stopped and it took 20 minutes to restart the heart. The doctor soon realized her heart could not continue to pump on its own. Soon after, her heart and lungs both stopped functioning properly, forcing doctors to place her on life support. Over the next 9 days, condition deteriorated, etc. There's one. They don't tell us what type of flu it was. 16-year-old girl and 10-year-old boy also died after contracting an influenza virus. They didn't go overseas. They were just from Texas. So people are 32 people have died from flu, H1N1, whatever, this year already. Young people especially hit hard. So this woman didn't, they didn't say where she went overseas, nothing.
Yeah, but I mean, she's all over the place. If she's in the northern hemisphere, she was in a country where it's flu season. So, the thing, this season was predicted to be a bad season for flu, based upon what it was like in the southern hemisphere when, during our summer, it was their winter. And so Australia had a particularly bad flu season. And so there were predictions that it was going to be bad in the northern hemisphere. What was different about this season is usually influenza B comes in towards the end of the flu season. It usually comes in, you know, like February. So you start seeing influenza B going up. And it's pretty low at the beginning of the season. And influenza B was very high this year. So influenza B was usually... is thought to be a milder version, but it can be problematic for younger people. There was a lot of influenza B at the beginning of the season, and there was a.
Hey, so what do our listeners do? What do we do to protect ourselves? The flu shot this year, the trivalent flu vax. Governments admitted that they apparently missed on their guesses, so that's not a real good thing for most people.
Yeah, well, it depends which one. I mean, it's a quadrivalent, and so, you know, there's four different viruses they talk. Mm-hmm. Most of them are quad because there's two different versions of influenza B, and they used to try to guess which one it was going to be. Well, it wasn't so much a guess. They basically picked the one that had been circulating the year before, and then... most of the time, the other one became dominant. So, you know, basically the one that had been circulating the year before, people got infected and they had immunity to that one. And then the other one kind of opened the door for the other one. That was the example I was giving you with the swine flu that I didn't really get to the back end of that argument. What happened in 2009 is that virus just became totally dominant. That it basically knocked out seasonal H1N1, and there wasn't any of that. But it not only knocked that one out, it pretty much knocked out H3N2 and influenza B. So it turned out that by the fall of 2009, the only strain that was circulating at any reasonable level was the swine flu. There was nobody had seasonal flu, the H1N1 seasonal flu, and no one had H3N2, and no one had an influenza B. And that's the same thing. It was a new virus. It had jumped species. it could spread in humans, although it kind of went through two waves. That I remember at the beginning of the school year, people got a mild disease, and most of them just kind of coughed a little bit. They didn't have a fever, and it seemed to go away. And then, like a month or two later, they got the H1N1 that was much more virulent, and they did have a fever, although it was only about half, but the half that had it had a good fever, and it spread dramatically. And I remember for Pittsburgh, they did a serology test, so they tested serum samples that were collected prior to the vaccine. The vaccine came out relatively late because the flu season started very early, so the vaccine came out like in December. So they tested serum samples that were collected prior to December. So if they had antibodies to the swine flu, it would be because they were infected, not because they were vaccinated. And they found 40% of the school age children had antibodies to H1N1. So 40% of the population got that virus by before the vaccine came out. And so that's how widespread it was. And it really was the only virus circulating. So that's what I'm saying is a concern about this virus in Wuhan is that right now the virus is circulating, seems to be pretty effective at transmitting. So the number of cases is high, but the number of super spreaders where people get real sick in big numbers, that hasn't happened that much. This one with the healthcare workers is the first one. But if that starts to become more common and leads to some mutation, like I said, the sequences that have been deposited don't have anything dramatically different. They're all virtually identical to each other. But if one pops up that's got a deletion and that deletion keeps showing up, there was one sequence that did have a few deletions, but it wasn't clear whether that was real or not. So far, it's the only one. If that one pops up again with some or one or more of the same deletions, then that uh-huh. would present a concern. The same thing is happening there. So at least what's been deposited, there's only one example of it, and it's not clear if it's real or not.
All right.
But that's what the worry is that there will be that type of mutation, and then it'll be even more virulent. And so that's why they're trying to kind of keep things in Wuhan. And it, you know, the odds are kind of against everything. You know, all the odds are against that really happening because, A,
correct.
There's the Chinese.
Oh, 300,000 going to Thailand? Come on.
Yeah. Well, I think there's supposed to be like 3 billion people that travel, you know, and so. Even if
this is just Chinese.
Right. Even if they're traveling within China, that they can get what's happening in Wuhan can be happening in the major cities of China. And then you would have a lot of people that were flying out of China with the virus because they wouldn't all be coming from one city. And they aren't being tested. And the same thing happened in China. It looked like it was, well, like I said, the only people they were testing were people they thought were related to this wet market. And there were other people in Wuhan that were in the hospital that had pneumonia that it was so severe they couldn't even move them. And they hadn't been tested until, you know, they reported these 17 cases, which was after everybody started to complain. So,
right.
You know, right now it is still pretty much contained, but historically, when you get a lot of people infected, then there are a lot of opportunities for some change to happen and that change to offer a selective advantage. And then all of a sudden, a new version takes off. So that's what these reports are talking about. They're concerned that the virus will mutate and that it will spread even more efficiently, or it'll be more lethal, or there'll be more super spreaders, and then you'll have these bursts. So it won't be, oh, we got a case in the United States. He was asymptomatic when he came. As soon as he started developing symptoms, he went to the doctor. They put him in isolation. He's recovering. No contacts have given any indication that the infection has spread. And it's kind of a, it's a big news story. Stock market went down. And yeah. It was on the front page of all the newspapers. But that one case is probably not a threat because he never really got that sick. But if a super spreader comes, like the one that went to Toronto, shows up in Seattle or San Francisco, and they get through the fever check, then the virus can be off and running and doing the same thing that happened.
Well, we'll know more in the change any time. In the next few days, we'll know a great deal more. So
well, you'll probably know from super spreaders. I would like to see the sequence of this super spreader that affected all these healthcare workers and see if that sequence is the same or not. And even if it is, that that tells you that maybe there are more cases, they just haven't been reported yet. Because when they ask about healthcare workers, they don't give them an answer. So 20 is the official number, and everybody, when I talk about it, they say there's at least 20, because there could very well be some super spreaders out there that haven't been reported yet.
Thank you, Henry. Everything we needed to know, and then some. We're up to date. We'll keep watching it. I'll be here. All right. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Sounds good. Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Dr. Henry Nyman, and there it is, all of it. That's and again, some of the information coming out in these brand new stories out of Beijing and so forth were known to Henry weeks ago. So that's how much in advance you're going to hear things right here. Okay, tomorrow night is Wednesday. William Gein will be here. Joel Skousen will be here. Brother Nathaniel will be here. I'll be here, and I hope you'll all be there. We'll talk tomorrow. Take care.